Hello again.
Hello.
Finn and Lydia.
Welcome to Wandering Into Wellness, episode 4.
Ooh, 4.
I know, that feels now really official, doesn't it?
4. I almost need 2 hands to count 4.
Do you though?
No, I don't.
You're like an alien from some other race.
One day.
So what are we talking about today?
We're talking about the fact that we don't drink as much as we used to. But we still have a lot of fun.
Yeah, right. So what's the place of alcohol? What's the role of alcohol in society now?
What is the role of alcohol in society, maybe? I think it's funny because we're talking from two very different perspectives here. I, the one who drinks, in a very limited fashion these days, to be honest, but would have had loads of fun with alcohol in the past. And you doesn't at all.
I don't drink at all. I had my last drink on the day of my final exam in school.
I feel like if you know the day that you had your last drink, it means that you're making a lot of it, which means that some level, it's kind of like a vegetarian who remembers their last meat meal. There's a want to go back there. There's like a kind of a longing, a morning at some level.
In fairness.
Or maybe it's just a mask. I don't know.
I
shouldn't judge.
I think the reason that I know it is because I was really ill at the time. So I had my drink. At the time, I had glandular fever. I feel like I mention this every single time. It's like a massive part of my life. But what happened with the glandular fever is that I got really bad. What's the word when you get loads of yeast? Candida. Right, so I got really bad candida, and what that does is gives you a blood alcohol level. You always have this kind
starts
of slight, it starts to produce it all the time. So say you have a tiny bit of alcohol, it's like having 4 times that amount. And I didn't know I had that at the time. I had like some champagne. Right.
Oh dear.
Thanks, I was like 17.
Okay, fair enough.
But you weren't
having
was,
much. Yeah, okay, that's true.
So I had my last drink, got ridiculously too drunk off my small champagne, and then my mum just so kindly, sorry mum, bought the car that was my like trial car to drive to school for me to drive home for the first time ever. Except I was drunk and I didn't realise, and no one realised because I'd only had a tiny bit of champagne, and then I crashed that car
on day one
into a hedge at a T-junction. In fairness, I'd been learning to drive in a car with automatic steering, and this car didn't. And we got to a T-junction, and I had to make a turn. There was a bank in front of it, and I didn't turn the wheel enough because I wasn't used to just like normal steering where you turn it a tiny bit. And we just went straight up onto a bank.
Oh, wow.
And
so your first experience of driving was drink driving?
I feel like this is not a good podcast.
That's great. So no wonder she's not a drinker, eh?
I can't believe this is happening.
That was a good one.
We're doing this.
Good chair.
So, after that, we realised that there was a problem happening with alcohol. And not that I'd ever been a really big drinker, but it just wasn't working for me, clearly.
Fair enough.
And so then we discovered what was happening, and I started getting those things like cystitis and thrush, and my digestive system wasn't working, and then someone explained to me what was happening. So I decided that I obviously had to stop drinking at that period, and I was also went to see a kinesiologist, and she put me on a kind of rigid diet where I was giving up gluten and dairy and sugars and all sorts of stuff, so it felt natural. And so I was off alcohol for a while, and then when it came to a point where I'd recovered enough that I could go back on alcohol, I was just heading off on my gap year, and I guess I'd always felt a bit like social situations that weren't one-on-ones were a little bit of a struggle for me. And I just would always use alcohol. Wasn't really this thing that I had ever done for fun so much as I looked forward to the drink. It was more like, if I have this drink, it's going to make this social situation afterwards easier. And there is a history of alcoholism around my family on various different sides. And I just thought, I wonder if I could go off on my gap year, put myself in this situation where I'm traveling to all these different places. I'm going to be in loads of really tough social situations. No one knows me. I don't have a background. If I could get through all those situations and make friends and survive without alcohol, I would know that I can just rely on myself.
That's
and that would be a really
decision.
Good thing.
It's more grown up than any decision I've even made in my life yet.
I do think I was always a bit weird like that.
You were a young fogey, possibly.
I was. Well, my dad died when I was 9, and I think that makes a massive difference.
Growing up fast.
You do just kind of grow up and be responsible. And I was the oldest child as well, so there was an onus on being responsible and stuff.
Apart from when you're drink driving.
I didn't know I was going to be drunk at that
point. Taking back to that, I'm sorry. But did you burst out laughing? Did you find it funny?
No.
How did they realise that you were drunk and not just a really, like, illiterate driver?
No, I don't think we did realise at that moment. I was just in big trouble.
Basically. Okay.
There was half a bank underneath my car and we nearly died.
So it took a while after that.
But I think once we realised later, we looked back on it and went, oh, maybe that's what happened
sense.
And also an element of really bad driving. You know, those two things happened at the same
time. Converged really badly altogether. Beautiful. So what do you reckon so when you started to, when you did suddenly cold turkey alcohol out of your life, although it wasn't a big part of your life, I understand that. Did you see an evolution in how you reacted in social situations? Did you begin to see like what the purpose of alcohol was for other people in any sort of positive life, or did you only see the negatives kind of and the ugliness of it, or how did it influence your impression of it?
I feel like this podcast is not going to reflect that great on me. We're doing it, so everyone's just going
to
be like, "That girl, she's not great. The guy, he's all right."
I just asked the questions for now. Staying well clear of my own alcohol stories, brilliant.
Yes, I mean, I wouldn't say that it made me look that favourably on other people in their alcohol experience.
Okay.
Because I just found that I was going out to parties and stuff, which in truth I had never that much enjoyed. I was never a big party animal, but I just found like everyone was really boring.
Right. While they were drunk, conversation didn't get stimulating.
I've always been a chat person. I get interested, intellectually stimulated is really important for me, and I just found that everyone was like a less good version of themselves.
Yeah.
Both physically and also mentally. And so I was just there.
No, but hang on, physically? But people can dance slightly, let's be honest.
No, but listen, I was at like 18 at the age of 19, so we were going to parties, people were getting drunk and stumbling around.
It was a messy thing.
We weren't adults,
you
know, people were going and getting too drunk.
Gotcha.
So at that point it was just like, and people, you know, people start to slur, and you might not notice that if you're also drinking.
Yeah.
But you'd notice it a lot quicker if you're not drinking, so you're already going, oh wow. They're slurring already.
So we're not going to remember this conversation or whatever. Yeah.
And people, but it was more than that. It was the extremely bad reaction I had directed at me when people found out I didn't drink.
People
were very, very aggressive, and not just aggressive. They would say things outright to me. And in fairness, this didn't really happen until I arrived in Ireland.
Yeah.
When I arrived in Ireland, I would constantly hear people say things to me like, "Well, I can't ever trust you if you don't drink." Like, to my face.
Can't trust you if you
don't
drink.
Or they would say, "What do you want to drink?" And I'd say, "I don't drink." They wouldn't know the history to my story. They didn't ask if I was on antibiotics, if I was maybe pregnant, nothing.
Yeah.
And I would go, "I don't drink. I'll just have a lemonade." And they would come back from the bar and put the drink down. And it would hit the table and I would know already from there it had alcohol in it.
Wow.
Because I could smell it.
Yeah.
And then I'd go, "Does this have alcohol in it?" And they'd go, "Just a bit of vodka."
The coercion.
Just trying to sneak alcohol into my drink because you think that's going to make everyone feel a bit better.
It's a social
about
lubricant,
themselves,
yeah.
Or I'm going to be more interesting or something, but it's really dangerous. I mean, I could have been allergic to alcohol, I could have been pregnant, I could have been on medication, any number of those things.
In all honesty, I'd say it happens a lot less nowadays because there's a culture that's slightly evolved around alcohol and around maybe like date raping kind of drug stuff. That's probably where the biggest taboo has come around, giving people alcohol when they're when they didn't ask for it.
But
I think. I think those people were largely probably just trying to have, to be permissive about their own kind of
habits.
It's because in some levels we always take somebody else doing perceived kind of better things than us in terms of lifestyle habits or whatever as a judgment on our own, and it's really difficult to live a life that is in any ways, you know, living to a standard that you set for yourself that the outside world doesn't necessarily always do. That unfortunately makes it you come across like the goody two shoes.
Yeah, that's
people
exactly
don't like
what it is.
Understandably.
They don't like it at all. They think that you're sitting there just
talking down to them.
Silent judgment of them, thinking they shouldn't be drinking. And, you know, it wasn't like that at all. If I found that I wasn't enjoying myself, I would just leave the situation. It wasn't like I stayed and then just thought, well, everyone else is awful.
Yeah.
I just went, okay, I'm not enjoying myself now, and then I leave. Or I wouldn't go to those situations.
Yeah.
I love reading. I would stay at home and read, or I would go to different, my friends do cool tea ceremonies, and I would go to tea ceremonies and really enjoy tea. And there's loads of other things that I just felt like I didn't need. And also I think that there's an element of me that's like massively childish still. I think lots of people lose that child thing when they grow up, and I don't think I did.
Haven't lost it, yeah.
No.
I can definitely test that.
And so I just felt like I didn't need it to have fun. I just felt like I actually had more fun when I did do it, when I did go to parties and I didn't drink.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I'm sure that my personal history up to this point, which I'm sure we'll get into more at some point, but there is, my safe zone is feeling in control.
Yeah, okay, sure. Fair enough. Yeah,
you
I'm
know,
the opposite.
To
I like
be reflective.
I'm like your son.
Unfortunately. And isn't it interesting that on my journey, I arrived with a son, the channel on all
really?
And already is.
Alcohol on that, because anyway, that'll be a thing you come to. It's a long way off, exactly.
You will just see my practices and model them.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. That's what parenting is that simple.
He will never drink.
No,
because he doesn't need it.
Exactly. He'll see exactly what it is.
So yeah.
But I wonder, like, I mean, in other like indigenous cultures where maybe ayahuasca is a thing, or like coca leaves, or you know, those sorts of other things that would have a somewhat a spiritual element to them, but like they're also a social lubricant for them as well, I'm sure, at some level. And are there people who abstain within their cultures, and how are they perceived? I wonder, is it the same kind of mistrust that goes on there? They're like, oh, you don't want to do ayahuasca this evening, Lenny. What? Come on. I don't know why you're Lenny. But Lenny, Lydia, maybe that. But it kind of does. I think it speaks to the thing that because we've decided to outlaw every other drug under the sun, we're left with this one that it does one very specific part of what psychedelics do, which is to kind of like take away some inhibition, but it doesn't do lots of the other things. And unfortunately, the thing, because it doesn't do those other things, we just do it more, and then we get to the excess point, and then and do it more again. Whereas if possibly it's coming down the tracks, isn't it, in terms of like legalization of marijuana and that sort of stuff, and I mean there's lots of interesting research going around acid, and I think there's weird people who are even like close to kind of right wing in politics are beginning to talk about that as well, which is fascinating. Once that comes, once that breaks down some barriers around, taboos of other drugs, I wonder whether that will maybe open up for a much more, potentially nourishing, spiritually, socially acceptable, kind of like fun-having sort of society. It's probably going to lead to a lot of hedonism as well. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in humans. I don't know.
I think the difference is also that in certain other cultures, like, say, Italy, they really respect the alcohol itself.
True,
so
fair
that's
point.
Different. Whereas what I found here when I moved here was that people were going, we're going out, let's get lashed first so that we can go out and have a good time. And it wasn't like, let's go buy some drink that we really enjoy to enjoy that drink for pleasure.
No.
It was like, let's get as many drinks into us as we can so that we can go out already drunk
and
enjoy ourselves.
And
that was really hard for me to understand. It just felt so weird. I just felt like there was such a chasm between where I was and where those people were in terms of their approach to life or approach to going out, that it was like we were just at this headbutting area where it was like there's no way through. And you know, a lot of my friends were musicians, and I was going to gigs all the time, and then people would just go, oh, you're not drinking? Oh, no, I'm not drinking, we can't be friends. Like, I had people say to me, we can't be friends, and just turn and walk away.
Oh, not in like a mocking tone?
No, just like, see you later.
Jeez Louises, that's tough.
And you're like, oh, okay. But again, coming back to my thing of being socially awkward and finding those situations challenging, it was good because I had to learn to really stand into my truth and my code.
That's
and
a real challenge for yourself.
This is a code that's important to me. And I think I was listening to a podcast recently about people who live according to a code. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean like some prescriptive thing that you've written down. And it doesn't mean that there should be one for all. And I think this is the beauty of this, is that if we live within our own code, we feel really comfortable. We feel really happy. We feel really good about ourselves. Mm. If we're slightly living without of our code, but we haven't owned up to that in ourselves, anytime we step outside of that, we feel shame about it. And then anyone who's reflecting that shame back on us, we just don't like them and get them out of the way. My, fancy IPA, special AO IPA thingy. and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I'm going, you know what, I deserve this. I work really hard, I'm at home, I'm really enjoying it, and it's enlightening my evening, it's enriching my evening. That's a different thing, because you're within your code. You're not going, I'm going to go out, get lashed.
On the lash, yeah.
Try and have a one-night stand with some girl that I can't see because I'm so drunk, and then not remember it the next day, and then feel guilt.
Yeah.
It's not, there's no guilt around it. You're
can't
just going, like,
that.
I really enjoy myself, and great, I feel great.
Yeah.
And then, like, respond to each other in that way of me going, hey, that's so nice. Like, that sounds like a lovely thing to do. And you don't feel like I'm sitting at home going, nothing.
Well, I wouldn't say I always sit within my truth in that way. I wish I could say I always do. But as you live and learn, I guess you sort of, I've tried a few times lately, particularly to be out and without alcohol, more as an experiment than like, oh, I have to drive, and it's really nice, but I would say it still doesn't feel like you integrate all that well. There's in Irish culture, we're still, there's a few generations, I think, before we can fully kind of sit with ourselves without pints of Guinness and kind of like relate to each other. And there's something lovely and nourishing that, you know, that Irish kind of saints and scholars thing, that also like that permissive kind of party attitude, which when we go abroad opens loads of doors for us, interestingly. Like it's kind of an important part of who we are. I guess we have to find a way to relate back to that without letting the ugly side kind of roam too badly. It's a toughie, isn't it? Do you have any particular things that you like to drink when you're out that aren't alcohol that you like?
Yeah, I really like non-alcoholic mojitos.
Okay,
so that would be my thing. And it feels like a treat. It feels exactly the same as a treat to me. I don't feel like I'm lacking. I don't feel like I'm going, oh, I wish that had that.
Yeah.
It just feels like a delicious treat.
Yeah.
So I like that. And I think my friends would tease me because I would always have teas in my bags and go to tea shops, arrive at people's houses. What tea do you want? Well, actually, I've got my own tea. Like the worst.
Do you like some of mine?
But I had this amazing friend called Dimitri. Most people who live in Dublin have met him. Very tall, striking Russian from Siberia. He trained in the art of tea ceremony.
Yeah.
And we used to, when I first came here and I was struggling to make those social contacts, he used to have a thing in his house every Tuesday where he would invite me and a bunch of other odd job people like me round. We would share the tea ceremony, and the nice thing is that because you pour the water in at a certain temperature, it's in a clear teapot, you watch the leaves unfold, and traditionally people would have gone around in a circle and described what they were seeing,
then they would
have described what they were smelling, then they would have described what they were tasting on the first brew, and then, because you only have a tiny little cup, and then you pour more water in and the taste evolves, and it would have been this thing that families did that was kind of poetic and encouraged that poetic nature in people, that they used specific words to describe different things, and they really mindfully sat and drunk and thought about this thing that they enjoyed, and it usually ended up in a discussion around wellness.
Okay.
At the end, a lot of the people maybe did massage or Reiki, and everyone would share, different things, and it was just this beautiful evening, and
lovely.
It felt like I was getting a lovely evening. It didn't feel any different. Why should it be any different? Why can't I have that evening and you go out and drink and dance and enjoy yourself? And one is not better or worse than the other, but it's just our own codes. It's just our own thing.
Yeah, it's a different type of release, and as long as you're getting a release that your body needs and that your soul needs, and that's really it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And I think, you know, we were talking about the birthday party thing recently, and like sugar and birthday parties, and if you try not to have your child eat that much sugar and you go to a party where sugar is
the same
is
thing
just
as being a non-drinker, pretty
it's
much.
The same thing.
Same
you're
thing,
there going, okay, don't eat that. Please don't eat that. Oh, I'll just give you this thing. And then everyone else thinks you're judging them.
Yeah.
But really, you're just trying to live by
your
code.
You actually can't see any pupils. Oh, you've just got rolling eyes. And probably like, oh, dear.
It's just, it does come back to that thing of what are you comfortable with for you and what are you comfortable with for your family? And
can you hold that truth? That's toughy.
And it's very hard. It's so hard to sit in your truth if it's going to make other people uncomfortable.
Yeah, but what's nice is you, hopefully, I mean, at some level, I know when kids are in school and stuff, the parents aren't unnecessarily part of your tribe or whatever, but at some level they will evolve to the point where they are hanging out with kids who are similar to them, who probably have parents similar to you, and then you'll find that you will be again with your tribe and that sort of way. I think that's really what's important, isn't it? Finding the tribe of people who have similar needs and outlets to you, and then and then you find that the other things kind of fall away, the needs that weren't yours in the first place kind of fall away, the things you were doing to kind of just catch up or keep up or fit in.
Yeah, and I think also the alcohol thing, a lot of times people's impulse to drink alcohol to excess, let's say, comes from a place of lack, right? It comes from the same place that I was coming from, that I moved away from.
Mm-hmm.
And in fairness, I probably only moved away from it because I had experience with alcoholism in my family, larger family, that I instantly recognized it in myself and went, oh, I don't want any part of that. I'm moving away from that really, really quickly. Other people who might not have that experience might not recognize it in themselves so quickly.
Yeah, big
and
time.
They're going, I don't feel comfortable with myself. I'm not actually that happy. And the only time that I'm happy is when I'm not thinking about life. I'm just avoiding life. And like, we don't want that. What we're all trying to move towards and what we're trying to strive for in our
living
life
in
is being mindful, being present, and just seeing the beauty that's around us and going like, this is life and this is beautiful
at
right
moment,
now.
Yeah,
we don't
yeah.
need this escapism. And if we do, we're doing it very consciously of going like, I'm choosing escapism right now and I'm enjoying escapism.
I'm not running away from it going like, what was that I'm running away from? You're aware of what it is.
You're aware of it and you're able to be a whole comfortable person, whether you're choosing alcohol in that moment or you're not choosing alcohol in that moment. And I think so long as you make sure that it's coming from that place, it's fine to do whatever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you're me or you're you or you're someone else who might take more. It's just where's the seed coming from? Where's the original thought?
Yeah. So one of the things that we recommend a lot in the shop of people dealing with like compulsive behaviours, be it around like alcohol or sugar eating, all those sorts of stuff. There's a few supplements that are really useful for people to try.
Okay.
There's two really, really good amino acids with glutamine and N-acetylcysteine. Have you come across those before?
Glutamine.
In terms of the gut health, probably.
So it
also occupies a neuroreceptor in the brain. So we have excitatory and inhibitory neurotransmitters. Glutamate is one of the excitatory ones. So when you occupy that neuroreceptor, there's a lot of studies that show that you can help to, particularly in alcohol and recovery from alcoholism, that it can reduce kind of compulsion, reduce that sort of behavior, the tendencies towards kind of going back to a doping and drink again. N-acetylcysteine likewise has a similar effect, as well as being a powerful detoxifier for the liver as well. There's a couple of really nice products. Viridian is a really nice supplement brand that do a thing called NAC Plus, which has N-acetylcysteine,
yes,
glutamate.
I've had that.
And it's got cinnamon as well, and chromium. So it's like, and the cinnamon mimics the action of insulin, so it helps to improve insulin
sugar
sensitivity.
Relating, isn't it?
Exactly.
So it also, if you're craving sugar, you can take cinnamon and things to help reduce cravings.
Exactly, big time. Yeah, and a lot of people would have those cravings where they think it's for, for instance, with chocolate, people like think it's for sugar, and actually it's possibly for the magnesium in the cocoa. So actually taking magnesium sometimes like nicks people's chocolate, particularly if it's a chocolate-related craving.
Yeah.
And chromium just helps to, so every time insulin, which is the thing that your body releases to help to get sugar out of your bloodstream, every time you release that insulin, in order to fix insulin onto your cells, your body has to send the glucose back into a cell to store it as glycogen.
Okay.
And insulin essentially is like the lock essentially at the edge of the cell.
Okay.
And so chromium is the lock on the edge of your cell, so the insulin has to fit onto the chromium, mm-hmm, in order to get the glucose into the cell. So using chromium can be really, really helpful. A lot of people find that useful.
That's interesting. And I think I used to work doing yoga therapy, mm-hmm, in an in-house, mm-hmm, rehabilitation center,
mm-hmm,
for people with alcohol addiction and drug addiction. And what I found was the most powerful, and this is obviously talking about the extreme end of this, because most people listening won't be in the grips of alcohol addiction, but what I found was so powerful in the recovery, because usually the first week they would be very resistant to yoga and why are you coming in here?
It's kind of a far cry from what they've been doing.
It's so far from it. And even like you're saying, can you take off your shoes and sit down on the mat? And then I don't want to take my shoes off. And how could you possibly have anything to help where I'm coming from? People came from a different socioeconomic background for me. They were listening to my accent and my voice and going like, lady, no, thanks.
Yeah.
You know, I don't
You haven't lived this, so you can't possibly help me. Yeah.
You know, and the second week they would always come back going, actually, kind of interesting stuff happened after last week. Or the people who are working with them in their art therapy or in their normal therapy would see differences.
Wow.
And by the third week, they were always really into it.
Really?
And they almost always they would go and carry on yoga after the course, after the 6 weeks. But the thing that changed them the most was the concept. When they were still, when they were mindfully breathing, when they were doing that little bit of meditation at the beginning, it wasn't so much the asana, although the asana got them out of their head enough to be, mm-hmm, able to just be for a minute and feel like, actually, my body just doesn't feel really nice right now, or, you know, this is really tight. And then maybe that tightness, maybe those feelings of discomfort that they weren't relating, they were going elsewhere to try and self-medicate. But once they found, okay, my shoulder's really sore, they could deal with that.
Okay.
The biggest change was coming back to the beginning breathing, which usually they didn't like very much in the beginning. But once they sat and breathed, and I talked to them about, you know, the thoughts that arise, watch the thoughts that arise, mm-hmm, how are they in your body, what are they coming up, are there repetitive patterns, and then understanding that there's us and there's our thoughts, and we are not our thoughts, because often people with addiction problems, they have these compulsive thoughts, or these thoughts that are negative, that are coming up constantly in their mind, and they're thinking, I'm a horrendous person, because these thoughts are coming up, and then they just want to seek to go somewhere else because they're going, I can't live with this horrible person that I am.
Like an anesthetic, basically.
Yeah, and we all have those moments. The brain's a really weird thing. Like, I don't know if you've ever had that thing where you stand, it's probably going to be another awful thing, but where you stand on the edge waiting for a train strike.
You've done really well. Well done. No, the other way around.
You stand on the edge of the train tracks and you're waiting for the train, and then you just think, what if I just jumped now?
Of course I
have.
Or
weird things. Or even just more things when you just have a baby and you've got this tiny baby and you're walking down the stairs and you think, what happens if I just fall?
Yeah.
What happens if I drop this baby? Mm. What happens if, you know, any of these weird thoughts, and they pop into your head. And luckily, hopefully, you have the presence of mind to go, that was a really weird thought.
Metabolize and make it disappear.
Okay, don't attach to it.
Mm.
But if you don't know about that, if you don't have those techniques, or if you're further on down the line, you're really tired, you might be sleep deprived, it could be postnatal depression.
When you confront those thoughts, you're just not equipped to.
You just lose yourself in those thoughts.
Absolutely.
And you just start thinking, I'm horrendous, I'm this awful, awful person. And it's so easy to understand how you would then go to this place of needing self-medication, of needing oblivion.
Mm.
And I think if you can just take simple breath practices, just come back to your breath and say, I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out.
Yeah, and
simply
this
that,
pass,
and this, breathing in, breathing out, and just watch the patterns of your thoughts and notice that you can be breathing in and breathing out and saying that whilst thoughts arise. So it's not you making those thoughts. Those thoughts are just naturally arising.
They're
and once you realise that and you're able to get that tiny bit of space between your thought and yourself to be objective about it, and then maybe take a moment between those thoughts, and then maybe replace the negative thought with a positive one. And then you can slowly begin to make those changes that might make you less likely to reach for alcohol in a way that isn't healthy, and and then move towards productive replacement.
Cool. Creative change.
Yeah.
Well done you. That was great.
Thanks.
Thank you for that. We learned a lot. Thank you for watching,
guys. We
learned
a lot about me.
Yeah, we really did learn a lot about Lydia.
And my weird ways.
So this and every podcast, we'll be giving away one of these fantastic hold-alls from
Musest.
Musest is probably my favourite, one of my favourite certainly supplement companies. All they make is two things. Those two things are two of the most magic things. So one of them is a really nice vegan protein based on European golden pea, which is like over 90% protein, which puts it in the same category in terms of biological value as whey protein, which is always seen as the gold standard in terms of, you know, absorbability, digestibility, strength, recovery, all those sorts of kind of like important things around muscle, kind of muscle regrowth and tissue repair, exactly, and also immune system function as well. There's so many things that proteins do that we don't. We really treat it as muscle kind of muscle bound man stuff.
And
unfortunately, they come in these big tubs, which is never going to change because protein by its nature is bulky. So that's a problem. But we found that, like, you know, my mum takes Musest from time to time. You have yourself on it, and Dom taking it, your partner as well, and husband. And like I think when we begin to like look at what might be most missing from our diet in the West is actually really good quality protein. Unfortunately, we get a lot of protein, but most of it's kind of crap. So anyway, Musest produced really good protein, and another thing called good green stuff, which we'll talk about another time. But so each podcast we're giving away one of these hold-alls to somebody who likes and subscribes down the bottom, gives us a nice little comment, and you can find us obviously on this, our YouTube channel, if you're watching it, or if you're listening on iTunes. And it'll be stuffed with goodies from my shop, The Hot
Sack. Healthy treats.
Yes, lots of healthy
nice
treats.
Stuff.
If we haven't gobbled them all before we send it out. You might just have empty wrappers and hold all. Is that okay? I think it'll be fine. Thanks again. Cheers, guys.
See you next time. Bye.